And we are back on the Majority Report. My name is Janine Garofalo. I'm here with Sam Cedar. And in studio, we are joined by investigative journalist Daniel Hopsicker. His new book is Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. And he's the publisher of the Mad Cow Morning News at www.madcowprod.com. Now, Daniel, this book, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, is so full. Like, there's a lot of us in it that are, I guess, participants in the 9/11 truth movement, if you will. We really want to know who knew what, when, why, where, all of this. But even this book has stuff like, oh, I never thought of that. That never occurred to me. Or I've never heard that before, even from people who devote a great deal of time, like Sander Hicks, your friend of mine, to learning about these things. So, you know, first of all, how did you become so inspired as to put this enormous amount of investigative time and energy into learning about these things? And what tipped you off that something just wasn't quite right intuitively, viscerally, that you just had to learn about these things?
Don't you hate two-part questions?
You only have to answer one or the other.
Sure, no, I'm happy to. And you've actually hit the most important point, which is you hadn't heard much of this stuff before or even thought about it. And what that brings up is the fact that almost 3 years after 9/11, there has not yet been an investigation to which the American people are privy. Okay? The Congressional Intelligence Committees did their investigation behind closed doors, and their report had 28 pages missing. We all remember that. The 9/11 Commission that is meeting this week or next week was only charged with coming up with suggestions for how it could not happen again.
You can't. You have to keep your mouth right on. I know.
Right,
you want.
On
I
it.
Know you want to look at me, Daniel. It's
all right,
very tempting.
I'm going to talk right here. Okay.
But you got to talk to
so
the mic.
Look. September 11th happened. 3 days after September 11th, it came out of the news, but quietly, sotto voce, that three of the four terrorist pilots had learned to fly at the tiny Venice, Florida airport, and I thought that's hinky. The reason I thought that's hinky is because my parents have had a retirement home in Venice, Florida for 25 years, and I've been visiting them for 4 or 5 days every winter. Venice, Florida has the second oldest population in the entire United States. There is no reason for a 30-year-old man, even if he is a terrorist, especially if he is a terrorist in the last year of his life, to go to Venice, Florida. And yet, the government's story is these people just walked in. So I thought, I had just finished a book on the biggest drug smuggler in American history, who also was a CIA agent and a pilot, and so I had a little bit of expertise in aviation crime. So I went to Venice, Florida to take a look around to see what I could find out, whether the government's story made sense, and the government's story doesn't make sense. And the FBI, I discovered, has been lying to us about basic things. Now, probably none of you are old enough to remember the Warren Commission, but I am, just I was like 9. After the Kennedy assassination, the government at least felt the obligation to respect the forms of democracy, if not the practice of it, with the Warren Commission, all right? In an independent investigation, even though they were political hacks, into the Kennedy assassination. Well, 9/11 is the biggest thing that's happened in my lifetime, and certainly it's the biggest thing that's happened in our national life since the Kennedy assassination, and yet, for over 18 months after it, George Bush was successful in keeping any sort of investigation from moving forward. And so you have to ask yourself why. Well, a lot of the reason is in Florida. Venice, Florida, where three of the four terrorist pilots learned to fly, is the biggest September 11th crime scene that wasn't reduced to rubble. But when I went down there, I wasn't bumping into Bob Woodward and Sam Donaldson, you know, or crawling across, you know, investigative journalists to get to the bar at the Crow's Nest. The only, you know, there was nobody there. I was there. And when you read the book, you'll find out why I'm the only one that was there, because the story is not as we've been told.
Now, let me just one question about Venice. What is the population of? Is there a big Arab population in Venice?
No. It's 10,000 Midwestern retirees, like my mom and dad.
So why did they lie about this?
Well. One of the reasons came out 3 days after September 11th, on September 15th, when Newsweek, the Washington Post, and the Miami Herald all reported that six of the 19 terrorists had attended military training at secure U.S. military facilities, that Mohammed Atta had attended a national officer's school at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. You aren't aware of that, are you?
No. I'm almost apoplectic when I heard that.
Let me tell you why you aren't aware of that. The reason you aren't aware of that is because the story was a one-day story, and then it died. The next day, the Pentagon issued a denial, which said that some of the biographical data doesn't match. Some of the ages don't match. And so these aren't the same people. Well, that's not the case, okay? Four of the 19 terrorists on their driver's license listed an address on the Pensacola Naval Air Station.
That's quite a coincidence.
Exactly.
And so, what are the implications of this? I mean, where is this lead?
Well, the FBI said 1 week after September 11th that they knew the terrorists were training on the flight schools in the U.S., but they never said why they didn't do anything about it. And now I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to tell you why in one simple sentence, okay? The same month that Mohammed Atta arrived in the U.S. to begin flight training at Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, along with the other Hamburg cadre principals, the owner of the flight school had his Learjet confiscated on the runway at Orlando Executive Airport with 43 pounds of heroin on board.
And on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're coming back, and you're going to keep on talking. You're going to keep on talking, my friend. We are here with investigative journalist Daniel Hopsicker. His new book is Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, and he's the publisher of Mad Cow Morning News at www.madcowprod.com. You're listening to The Geordie Report. Sam Cedar over there looking at me with his jaw agape.
Yes, I am. Air America Radio.
I feel a cold coming on, and I'm in a wedding this weekend.
This cold better be gone soon. I'm going on vacation. Is there any way to make a cold go away faster?
Yeah, is there?
There is. Cold Ease lozenges, clinically proven to reduce the length of a cold by almost half. No other product has Cold Ease's patented homeopathy.
Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, he's an investigative journalist who has just told us that the owner of the flight school in Florida, where supposedly a couple of the terrorists were trained,
yeah,
his personal jet was confiscated with pounds and pounds and pounds of
43 pounds. That's what's known in the drug trade as heavy weight.
That's a mother load
of heroin
on the day. What day was it?
In July, the same month Mohammed Atta ostensibly arrived, although Atta had been in this country for years. Let's take the official story just briefly, okay? And it's amazing how little of it is true and how no one has questioned it. Certainly no journalists have questioned it, okay? No journalists at all. The official story is that Mohammed Atta arrived June 3rd, the year 2000, and yet people that rented cars to him said he sounded as if he had been in this country for a long time. He'd been in and out. They said Mohammed Atta arrived to go to flight school, learn to fly, become a pilot. Well, when he arrived here, he had pilot's licenses from five or six different countries, according to his girlfriend, his American girlfriend. They said that Mohammed Atta and his confreres were Islamic fundamentalists. Well, Mohammed Atta lived for 2.5 months with a pink-haired stripper, did cocaine regularly, drank heavily every night.
Wait, is this George Bush or Mohammed Atta?
This is Mohammed Atta.
Oh, Mohammed Atta. Okay, I'm sorry. I got confused.
This is Mohammed Atta. So he's clearly not any kind of Islamic fundamentalist that I've ever heard about. You know, living with a girl with pink hair does not seem very Wahhabi to me, does it?
No, and the cocaine and the stripper, that part is definitely not Wahhabi.
So here's the story. In 1998 and early 99, if you went to Southwest Florida, there might have been one or two Arab flight students in Southwest Florida. Beginning late 99, in the year 2000, there were hundreds, and in 2001 there was more than 1,000. Okay, Southwest Florida was flooded with Arab flight students. Okay, so someone was running an operation. Being that it was Florida, being that this is the United States, one would leap to the conclusion that it would be the CIA. But someone was running an operation, a covert operation, to train Arabs to fly for reasons unknown.
Yes.
Yes, tell us more.
Let's talk about the guy that told us what happened. The official story, if you remember, okay, was given to us by a Dutch guy named Rudy Dekkers, who was all over television in the days after the attack. He went on every TV show there was. He was on Larry King Live. He was on Dan Rather. He was on Peter Jennings. He was on Tom Brokaw. Rudy Dekkers is an international criminal, wanted in his native Holland. He can't go back there without being put in jail. And yet not one journalist did due diligence. And he was lying. Rudy Dekkers was lying. And the reason he was lying...
What did he claim?
Tons of things. He claimed he didn't know Muhammad Atta. Well, he had lunch with Muhammad Atta a week before the attack.
Why was he on these shows?
Because he was establishing the official story.
Okay.
And it was being, according to a flight student and also an executive at Huffman Aviation, he was being coached on what to say by the FBI. The FBI, for example, was outside. They were at the flight school in the middle of the night, okay? But they were actually outside executives' homes 4 hours after the attack. Actually, if you listen to the or read the transcripts of the flight attendants on Flight 11, the two that were released by the 9/11 Commission, within 10 minutes after they knew the plane had been taken over, they knew that Muhammad Atta was flying the plane.
Now, wait, the flight attendants knew this?
No. I mean, they developed that information in conjunction with the people back at that they were speaking to at American Airlines.
So what is it about the tapes that said that Atta was flying one of those planes?
What is it about?
Yeah,
the people, not the tapes saying that Muhammad Atta, you're saying...
No,
yes,
on the tapes, they knew that Muhammad Atta was flying that plane within 10 minutes after it was taken over.
So you're saying that the people at the airports, presumably, or at flight control, were saying that Muhammad Atta was flying one of those flights?
The flight attendant who phoned American Airlines base in Dallas to say, we've been taken over, passengers' throats are being slit.
Right, they had the seating chart. So
yes.
I've heard about this before, though, and other people saying because the women had the presence of mind, or the flight attendants had the presence of mind to see what seats were empty, and they phoned that in, what seats, and they had the charts of what the names of the people in those seats were. And so that connection, I have heard that before in regular media.
Yeah. So, why didn't they do anything about it? If they knew these people were here? Well, the reason they didn't do anything about it was because it was a protected operation. They were training Arabs to fly, and they were running drugs. And it was a protected operation. And how do I know that? Because the flight school owner's Learjet, confiscated with 43 pounds of heroin on board, was being flown by a man whose day job is as chief pilot for Venezuela's Air Force One. The co-pilot on the plane, whose name was not mentioned in any court transcript, there's a reason for that, was a DEA agent from Guyana.
How did you find out that he was a DEA agent?
I can't actually remember that. Right, someone told me. Someone with inside information told me. But I know his name. I won't mention it on the air. Most people ask about the chief pilot for Venezuela's Air Force One.
And what is it? Well, does that have anything to do with the Hugo Chavez recall that's going on right now?
You know, I have no idea what that has to do with. But if you've got a plane, and it was flying a weekly run, by the way, 30 trips down and back to Venezuela before they got caught. And when they did get caught, it was by mistake.
Now, why would they, if they're going to Venezuela, now, what was the idea? I mean, give us a little bit of an overview now. What was the plan?
Let's talk an overview, okay? Let's talk Afghanistan, right? Let's talk what the government's told us that maybe might halfway be true, okay? Afghanistan produces over half of the world's heroin. Two-thirds now, but over half of the world's heroin in the year 2000. Well, Osama bin Laden was reputed to have run Afghanistan, so Osama bin Laden was the heroin king. Now, the Taliban put out a press release that said they were going to stop growing opium. Well, you can believe the Taliban's press releases. Why would you believe Mullah Omar any more than you believe George W. Bush? In fact, the UN and Amnesty International said then in the year 2000, when they were supposedly stopping growing opium, opium cultivation increased by 50%.
Well, I know now it's the number one export in Afghanistan again, and there's, you know, I've mentioned this before on the show, that there's even a problem with a lot of the troops that are serving in Afghanistan are having problems with heroin addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it's, it never stopped, did it? Or actually, didn't the Taliban, in some sense, try to crack down?
No, They didn't. I mean, see, that again, there are some people that believe that nothing bad in this world ever happens that the U.S. government isn't responsible for. And there's a lot of facts to back that up, okay? But people lie that don't work for the U.S. government, and Mullah Omar was lying because Osama bin Laden headed the world's first Islamic drug cartel. And someone in the U.S. government, before September 11th, on September 10th, for example, was doing business with him. And the deal, according to federal prosecutors in New Jersey, the typical deal is oil and heroin for guns and training. Guns and training. Well, they were teaching people to learn to fly. That's training. Now, let me ask you, have you ever heard of an organization in this country that both runs drugs and trains terrorists?
The CIA?
If it starts with a C, I think it's the CIA.
Well, I couldn't say it, but I'm glad you did.
The Central Intelligence Agency? I'm guessing. I don't know.
My feeling has always been that there is another three letters. I don't know what they are, but there's some other organization within the context of the CIA.
Actually, that's true. The NSA's budget is 10 times larger than the CIA's.
But the CIA is sort of it's the old snowball trick. You lob one, and then you whip them. You whip the guy with a strike right in the face.
Now, when you look at the fact that the flight school owner's plane had 43 pounds of heroin,
that's
and
a
he
weird
had all
coincidence.
These, all these, well, yeah. Well, it's not though. See, that's the thing. A courageous prosecuting attorney would draw the correct inference from that, would present it to a jury, and would win a conviction. Okay, we don't have. That's what 9/11 needs right now, okay? It doesn't need more truth commissions, you know, in my humble opinion. It needs a courageous prosecuting attorney like Jim Garrison in New Orleans after the Kennedy assassination, who was right, okay, to step forward and bring a case that will compel the government of the United States and its investigative agencies to present the evidence that they have. And the evidence will show that the 19 Arab hijackers on those planes flew those planes. Okay, there are some people, see, there are only two groups of people that don't seem to really want to know the truth about 9/11, and one group is certainly George W. Bush, and the administration has done everything they could to keep any truth from slipping out. And the other group, strangely enough, is composed of people who believe that if you say the word Arab in the same sentence as the word hijacker, that's racial profiling, which is ridiculous. And the people that say we attacked ourselves. It is possible, certainly not probable, but possible that eventually it might turn out to be that we knew it was going to happen and allowed it to happen, or even maybe that we did it ourselves. But I highly doubt it. I think there's a certain arrogance there that says that we are so powerful that no one can attack us. Well, the Saudis have been making more money than God for 30 years. If you go to Florida like I did and spend 2 years, you will find out that the state of Florida was bought by Saudis lock, stock, and barrel. Muhammad Atta could, like, leave a plane on the runway at Miami International Airport, walk away from it because it stalled and have nothing happen to him. No one else could do that. You couldn't do that. I couldn't do that.
I don't think it's arrogance, though. I think the point is people think of things like Operation Copper Green, where there was people in the government during Kennedy's administration who wanted to create an attack so that they could attack Cuba. And so they wanted to fake it, to rally the troops, if you will. And then there are people in the Project for the New American Century who would say, you know what would be good for us? A new Pearl Harbor.
You know, you're exactly right. And there are a lot of, and certainly the government's behavior after September 11th would seem to indicate, certainly Iraq would seem to indicate that you know, that they used it for advantage.
All right, well, let me ask you a question. Okay, so we've established that there's some type of drug connection involving these hijackers. Why did they fly these planes into the Twin Towers?
Muhammad Atta hated us. I don't know why they flew. Okay, let me speculate with you, because you just asked a speculative question. I mean,
right, yes.
I'm an investigative reporter, and I've got more facts in this, you know, I don't want to sound more facts in this book than in Bob Woodward's book and Richard Clark was put together, and I'm not going to get my week on TV, okay? You're not going to hear most of this.
Oh, wait. You're on the show.
I'm on air. Okay. I'm on air. You know, God bless
Literally
Al.
Literally tens of people
God
are listening.
God bless Al
right
Franken,
now.
You know.
All right, but no, so speculate
okay.
with me.
I am going to speculate with you, because I'm going to give you an alternative explanation okay. for the one that's propagated by people that don't believe the government, okay?
Okay.
Can you envision a situation in which our callow and arrogant current president could anger someone in a negotiation to the point, make them an offer that he thought they couldn't refuse, and they did?
Sure.
Yes. I'm suggesting here that September 11th would not have happened if Bill Clinton was president, nor Al Gore. Not that I like either one of those two people, you know, particularly, but there's something about the personality of our current president, I believe, that inspired.
We've heard stories to the effect that Cheney went, part of his energy commission was to go over to Afghanistan and say, basically, you guys got a choice. We want to build this pipeline, and we want Al-Qaeda, and we want the Taliban to play ball. If you do, you get your country carpeted with gold. If you don't, you get your country carpeted with bombs. And so let me just catch us up to speed, because we got to go shortly. But basically, what you're saying is that you have proof, or at least a lot of evidence, that there was a drug running operation by the CIA that was using a lot of former Arab citizens, I guess, or Arabs, to fly these drugs ostensibly to different parts of the world, and that essentially these Arabs had dual loyalties, and Bush pissed off one of their other patrons,
and they double crossed us.
And now, but here's the one question that remains there. Did they know they were going on a suicide mission?
Let me tell you what I know about Muhammad Atta, and that'll answer it, but maybe you don't have enough time before we break.
Well, we got to take the break shortly, so give us the 60-second.
Muhammad Atta was a psychopath. Muhammad Atta hated us, and Muhammad Atta was a psychopath. Now, if all you need is an Arab patsy, okay, to sit on a plane, okay, and control it by remote control, you don't have to go to the trouble of finding a psychopath that tears kittens' legs off.
Bill Frist? No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Bill Frist used to experiment on cats that he adopted from shelters when he was a med student.
But, yes, okay, so you have Atta, who's a psychopath, and are you saying that there was other psychopaths on the other planes as well?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I know Muhammad Atta was a psychopath. I know Muhammad Atta hated us, and I'm absolutely certain that he was flying that plane.
It's also conceivable that when that there were other pilots who were sent in, and maybe Atta didn't realize...
You know what? Here's... I need to say this.
Okay.
So I need to say this. In a situation where our own government has given us so little information, it is incumbent on us to act responsibly. Okay?
Right.
I mean, the spiders from Mars could have pushed a button and the World Trade Center flute fell down,
right.
But I don't think that's what happened. And I think all of this hooey, about missiles hitting the Pentagon and missiles coming out from under the wings of airplanes is designed to prevent us from doing what any homicide investigation would do, which is to investigate the perps or the alleged perps and their associates and find out what was really going on.
I agree. Scott Ritter would say that all the time. This is a crime. Investigate the criminals who perpetrated the crime. We have been talking to Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, available on Mad Cow Press.
And there's a link on MajorityReportRadio.com right now. Go buy the book. Read the book. Your jaw will be dropping around your waistline. You're listening to the Majority Report on Air America Radio. We'll be back for a couple of short minutes. Talk to you soon.